CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... By the time this settlement of immigrants established itself in the United States of America, it had already produced, alongside its statesmen and traders, various writers of distinction who had come to be respected and admired all over the civilized world. Once the new republic was formed and proclaimed, the land burgeoned with many more, of whom one was Washington Irving, born in New York City in 1783. The drama we're about to present for your enjoyment is a free adaptation of one of his stories.
But, Gottfried, you live like a solitary. You live like a monk.
Not at all, Carl. Paris is full of women. Fastidious, flirtatious, fascinating. I love them all.
Well, that's all very fine, but there should be one. One in particular.
There is. I see her every night.
Where is she? Why haven't I met her?
Because, my dear friend... she lives in my dreams.
Our mystery drama, The Guillotine, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Elspeth Eric and stars Paul Hecht.
I'll be back shortly with Act One.
In 1825, a collection of short stories by Washington Irving was published under the title of Tales of a Traveler. One section of the book is charmingly headed, Strange Stories by a Nervous Gentleman. And it is from this section that we have chosen the tale that follows, one we call The Guillotine.
I am of a brooding and introspective nature. It has always been thus. It was never that I scorned the follies and the fripperies of this world. Indeed, I begrudged others their free and easy access to such vanities, their effortless enjoyment of them, with a profound and a scorching envy that was driving me to the very edge of my self-control. I felt about to howl with the torment of my incapacity. In my agony, I turned to the only friend I had, my fellow student, my compatriot, the sole human who had tolerated my intolerable moods without blame, without censure, without what surely would have finished me off, without abandoning me.
Gottfried, my dear friend.
Help me, Carl, help me.
But of course, just tell me what I can do.
I don't know.
Is it money? Do you need money?
Money. If it were only money. It is myself. My tortured, restless, squirming self that looks for rest and cannot find it. That searches for peace and watches it retreat with every step I take. Desperation tracks my heels when I walk the streets. Melancholy meets me at every corner. And gloom. Deep, impenetrable gloom fills the house where I live.
Gottfried, you are so much more clever than I.
Clever? You call me clever?
You shut yourself away from others.
No, not from you. You are my link to life, my only tie to the real world about me.
Then let me tell you straight out what I think. Your manner of living, your fevered absorption in your studies... your avoidance of the company of most men and all women...
But I never know what to say to them.
All these things combined, Gottfried, have impaired your health. You are haggard and pale. Your shoulders are bent. Your eyes have a look that is not quite of this world. Forgive me, my friend, if I speak roughly.
No, you speak truly.
But I think it is not alone your body that is failing. I think your imagination has become... forgive the word... diseased. Have I said too much? Have I gone too far?
I must tell you that of late I have been studying many philosophical theories. Not just the recognized ones, but those more obscure, more perhaps radical.
Do you have the mind for such weighty things, Godfrey?
I've gone back to the Egyptians, to the Hindu. I walked with Paracelsus in his garden. Of late, I've immersed myself in the teachings of Swedenborg and his New Jerusalem Church.
Swedenborg? I don't think I know
him. He's a Swedish philosopher, a religious writer. He died a few years back, but he claimed to have established direct communication with a spiritual world.
How did he do that?
Through the opening of his spiritual senses.
And you? Well, can you? Has that happened to you?
Of course not. It didn't happen to Swedenborg until he was 57 years of age. But it might happen, or something very like it might happen to me. If only...
What, Godfrey? If only what?
If only I could escape.
Escape whom? Escape what?
An evil influence, Carl. It hangs over me night and day.
Oh, how can you say such things?
Because I know them to be true. There's an evil genius, a vile spirit, whose sole intent is to ensnare me and to ensure my damnation.
You really believe
it? It is not so much a matter of believing, Carl. It is a matter of conviction. Conviction that it is so. And being convinced that it is so, it is so.
I think I can understand that. Though I am not sure. I have never been given over much to fancies of that sort. I'm more of a practical man, you might say. Still, in a way, I can understand how a man like yourself could seize upon such an idea and become a, well, let's say a victim of it.
Yes, yes, you hit on the word, Carl. I am a victim. A victim of my own imaginings. Yes, you are exquisitely correct.
Well, then, if I could go on and make a further suggestion.
By all means, speak out.
It's my thought that you should leave here and go to Paris.
Paris?
You could finish your studies there as well as here.
Well, the Sorbonne is as fine a university as one could wish.
And Paris is such a splendid city.
A change of scene.
A change of company, perhaps. Female company in particular. Who knows what all that might do for you?
Yes. Who knows? At first, it seemed that Paris might indeed be the answer to my dilemma. The revolution was breaking out and beginning to spread. I had studied Jean-Jacques Rousseau's social contract, paragraph by paragraph, and his theory of the equality of man and representational government had captivated my mind. More than that, the delirium of the people of Paris, their fervor, their ecstasy, it seemed that simply to live in such an atmosphere would be enough to cleanse my mind of its morbidity. I found myself a room on a narrow, dark street in the Latin Quarter, not far from the monastic walls of the Sorbonne. The concierge who showed me my quarters was as gloomy as the street itself.
There it is. 2 francs.
It has a window?
You can see that it has.
Ah, yes. I'll need a table to put in front of the window. Could you arrange that? And a straight chair to put in front of the table, is that possible? I am a student at the Sorbonne. I'll be doing some writing.
I'll arrange it.
Could you also arrange for an armoire? I have only a very few clothes, but I would...
There are nails on the wall.
Oh, yes, yes, I see. Now, about bookshelves, I have very few clothes, but I have a great many books, and I expect to have more, so...
I have no bookshelves.
I see. Well, for the time being, I suppose I can stack them on the floor or under the bed. I'll manage.
2 francs.
Oh, yes, yes, of course. there you are.
Mm.
The students at the Sorbonne seem very excited about the uprising.
Students are always excited about something.
And the establishment of the National Assembly.
A gesture.
Oh, but madame, it confirmed the revolution. The king will never again be absolute.
If not the king, then it will be another.
How can you be so pessimistic?
Why, the day the people captured the Bastille. I was not here, but I heard of it. The king went to the guild hall. He gave in. He even wore the red, white, and blue cockade, I was told. That is true, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
Well, then, the arrest of the royal family?
Yes, yes.
And the march on Paris from Marseille? Oh, what a thrill. They managed 18 miles a day, I'm told. Imagine that, in midsummer and drawing their cannon with them. No body of men has ever accomplished such an extraordinary feat.
Yes, yes.
The king, the queen, the dauphin, all imprisoned in the tower of the temple.
Oh, yes.
And the establishment of the Committee of Public Safety.
You approve?
Well, how could I not approve, madame, with the great Marat heading the committee?
Marat is a madman.
No, no. Not mad. Oh. Or if he is not quite sane, that is due to his ardent belief in equality and government by general consent.
The massacres of September? More than 1,000 killed?
Well, I know very little of that.
You know very little of anything, monsieur. It's your youth, perhaps. I should be generous and call it that.
Well, it's true. I'm young, but I'm not completely ignorant of the world and its ways. Not completely.
You are. You are ignorant and you are arrogant.
Madame, I must protest.
Have you heard of a man called Robespierre?
Yes, I've heard of him.
He is idolized by the people. He will join the Committee of Public Safety before the year is out. And the king will lose his head.
Yes, in January of 1793, King Louis XVI was guillotined. 6 months later, Robespierre joined the Committee of Public Safety. Hundreds upon hundreds passed before the Revolutionary Tribunal and were executed. Dolto, the man I had idealized, was among the victims. So was Madame Elisabeth, sister to the king. So was the queen. I sickened and turned away. The terror had begun, and I shrank from the sight of it. I spent the better part of my days in the libraries, those catacombs of departed authors, rummaging among their hoards of dusty and obsolete works in quest of food for my unhealthy appetite. I became, in a manner of speaking, a literary ghoul, feeding in the charnel house of decayed literature.
Washington Irving was born just as the seeds of the French Revolution were starting to germinate. By the time he was of school age, the revolution had been confirmed by the establishment of the National Assembly. At the age of 8, he was old enough to hear from his elders of the March on Paris in the spring. His 9th and 10th years must have been filled with rumors of the executions in Paris, years which came to be known as the Terror. I'll be back shortly to continue with Act Two.
I'm Susan Anton. The perfect picture gives you the top comfort you love and the deep support you need. Top comfort, deep support. You get both from every Taylor Perfect Sleeper. That firmness, it feels good.
Washington Irving started out to become a lawyer, but his health was not robust, and, as was very much the habit with doctors of his time, he was advised to travel abroad and so build up his constitution. We shall never know what sort of lawyer he might have become, but we know for a certainty that he developed into a first-class writer, and it was his early visit to Europe which roused his interest in the gothic tales of terror and romance, such as the one we have adapted for you.
It would have been just as well had I never come to Paris. I was as lonely here as I had been at home, as incapable of establishing human contact as ever. I sank deeper and deeper into my studies of writers long deceased and saw no one, no one at all, but the old crone who was concierge of the establishment where I had my cell-like chamber. Yes, who is it? Come in.
someone to see you.
What? To me? This has someone wishes to see me?
So he says.
Well, who is it? Didn't you ask him?
He spoke as though he knew you from elsewhere, as though you were old friends.
Carl? Did he say his name is Carl?
I told you he didn't say. I didn't ask.
Yes, of course, of course. It's Carl. Who else could it be?
Well, what shall I say to him, your friend Carl?
Well, ask him kindly to come up at once, if he will, or I'll come down. Anything at all. Tell him he's most welcome.
Would you believe it? I was trembling all over. Clumsily, I tried to put the room into some kind of order. I kicked books under the bed. I scraped together papers and notebooks from my table and tried to stack them into a semblance of neatness. I patted the narrow little bed and drew the spread more evenly over its lumpy surface. I was scurrying about like the most frantic housewife when I heard Carl's voice from the doorway.
It's only I, you know, Godfrey.
Only you, Carl. Carl, come in, please. Sit down. Carl, I am so happy to see you. You don't know. You just don't know.
I am happy that you are happy.
To have someone to talk to. Someone like you. Someone who understands. I did not know till now, till this very moment, how much I have needed someone I could talk to open my heart to.
Wait now. You mean there's been no one here in Paris?
No. No one at all. I have spent my time at the Sorbonne, in the libraries, in the museums.
But, Gottfried, no one can live entirely within libraries and museums.
Yes, I know. The moment I saw you standing there, I knew.
It begins to look as though I gave you bad advice, counseling you to come to Paris.
No. It was sound advice. At least it seemed to be, at first. Paris seemed to be the tonic I was needing.
At first, you say? Well, then what?
Well, wait, I haven't offered you anything to drink. I must have a bottle of wine around here somewhere. Yes, here we are. Cheap sort, I'm afraid. Very ordinary Beaujolais. I'm sorry, I could go out for...
Godfrey, don't excite yourself. Think of whom you're speaking to. It's Carl, your friend. Think of all the evenings we shared a bottle of the cheapest wine and found it sufficient because of the pleasure of each other's company.
Yes.
Can't we open this bottle in the same spirit?
Of course we can. Forgive me. My manners have grown coarse. Comes from being too much alone. There must be another glass somewhere around. I'm sure I had one. Oh, here we are. Now. Oh.
Godfrey.
To friendship.
Our friendship. Yours and mine.
You know, I am beginning to feel almost like a man again.
Tell me what has brought you to this sorry state.
The blood.
I beg your pardon? You said the blood?
You know how wildly enthusiastic I was with the political theories of the revolution and the philosophy behind them. They seemed to open a vista of progress for mankind. A wide and open road down which we could travel toward the perfect state.
You were always one to look for perfection.
And why not? Why not?
Well,
why were we put on earth if not to search for the perfect state? Are we supposed to wallow in the mediocre and pretend that it suffices? Roll about in filth and call it good? Is that our reason for being? Is that what we were created for in God's image?
Dear friend, you must try not to excite yourself.
Excite myself? It is enough to drive me mad. That the visions were all forsaken and the visionaries turned to killing. The dreams were trampled. And the dreamers drowned themselves in blood. Carl, there are times when I think it has done just that. Listen to me, Carl. Let me tell you something. I must tell someone. There's only you. No one else.
Of course, Gottfried. You can tell me anything.
Carl, in the most ancient part of Paris, where the Hotel de Ville lies, you know the place?
I have heard of it.
On the Place de Grève, the open space in front of the Hotel de Ville. That is where they have erected the guillotine.
I have heard, yes.
This instrument of death stands ever ready. The scaffold runs all day with blood. All day. Each day. Victims are dragged there and made to kneel.
A heavy blade is released. It slides swiftly down vertical guides. And the head of the victim, oh, Heavenly Father, it is too horrible, too terrible. I can't endure it.
You mustn't take these crimes upon yourself. A revolution has never been accomplished without shedding blood.
Yes, but this has become a mania for blood, an insatiable thirst. Even now, at this moment, while the city sleeps, that horrible engine stands, grim and silent, waiting for fresh victims. It sickens me. It congeals my heart. It freezes my blood.
I understand. I do.
And that is why I have turned away to the study of ancient writers. Dead thinkers, anything to separate me from the awful present.
My poor Gottfried, I'm so sorry. So sorry.
Thank you. I am ashamed to accept your pity, yet I thank you for it. Which shames me all the more that I should be grateful.
But there must be other things. There must be more to life. Come, let's finish this bottle of wine before I have to leave.
Leave? You have to leave?
Oh, not quite yet. I can spend another quarter of an hour with you.
A quarter of an hour? No more than that?
I must take a train back at midnight.
I had thought, I had hoped that I have been so alone.
Yes, come now. Let's make the most of our time together. Drink up now, and we'll talk of pleasant things. Such as...
Yes, such as what?
Well, such as women, for example.
Yes.
Surely there are women in Paris who have taken your fancy.
Oh, yes. Yes, many, many.
Well, there now. You see? Things are not all black and gloomy.
Of course, I have not met any women. I haven't the knack. I've never had it. You know that.
Well, I thought that here, in Paris, you might, well, acquire it. Learn the ways of the world.
Oh, no, I'm too shy. I can't find the courage. But I think about them.
Oh, do you know?
Yes, yes, I do. I think of them a great deal when I come back here to my lonely room, my cell. I think back in my mind to the delectable faces I have seen on the streets. You know what, Carl?
No, what?
In my reveries, in my dreams of them, they are even lovelier than they looked on the streets. What do you think of that?
Do you mean to tell me that there isn't even one woman? One in particular. Just one.
Oh, yes. Yes, there is one. One very particular one.
Oh, that's better. Tell me about her.
Tell you about her? How can I tell you about her?
Well, start by telling me what she looks like.
Yes. Well, her skin is very pale. Very, very pale. White. Like a white rose.
Her eyes?
Dark. Dark and burning hot like sultry suns.
Better and better. Her hair?
A shade of red, I think.
You think?
Yes, yes. Her hair is reddish. Some might call it somber. But against the pallor of her skin...
And her name?
Her name? What about her name?
Well, aren't you going to tell me the name of your lover?
She has no name. Why should she have a name?
Guthrie, are you drunk?
I have never given her a name. Why should I? She's my dream.
You only dream of this woman? She's not real? She doesn't exist?
She is real to me. She exists in my dreams. She lives in my thoughts by day. She haunts my dreams by night. Don't you understand? I love her.
Oh, my poor friend.
I shall always love her to the end of my days. So, you see, I am not quite as lonely as you thought. Not at all. Not lonely at all, because she is with me at all times.
I think I see. Dear friend, It is getting on for midnight, and I have a train to catch. Will you walk with me to the station?
Of course I said I would, and I did. Though it was a stormy night, claps of thunder were rattling among the high houses of the narrow streets. Lightning flashed now and again, and the rain that began to fall seemed to drop into my heart as much as on the cobblestones. When I had watched the train depart, carrying off my only friend, I thought to return to my room, but something... A morbid recollection of our conversation, no doubt, drew me, or forced me, toward the Hotel de Ville and the Place de Grève. In a sudden flare of lightning, I saw it. The horrible engine of death, the guillotine. A violent tremor ran through me, and I wanted to run. But something held me rooted to the spot till the lightning burst forth again. And there, crouched by the guillotine, I saw a shadowy form all dressed in black. A female form seated on one of the lower steps of the scaffold, leaning forward, her face in her lap, her long, disheveled hair hanging to the ground. Her long, reddish hair.
You are listening to a tale of terror and romance, told in the Gothic style. So-called Gothic stories were enormously popular in the 19th century, and they have never wholly ceased to be in demand by the reading public, or for that matter, the viewing audience, or, as now, the listening one. It is good to remember that the Gothic romance was assisted into our world by a gentleman from New York, Mr. Washington Irving. I'll be back shortly with our concluding act.
This is Lorne Greene. In television, actors and crews are called professionals, but in ham radio, the operators call it amateur radio. That's because in their spare time they perform so much service to the public without charge, even though the fine work they do is very professional in quality. In times of earthquake, fire, or flood, they provide almost immediate emergency communication. Other times they're devising new and better electronic methods for talking around the world, improving international friendship. My amateur radio friends tell me they even have relay satellites called Oscars circling the globe. This makes it easy to communicate with very low power over great distances. The incredible world of amateur radio welcomes anyone of any age who is willing to study for a license. There are all sorts of helpful networks every day. Something for everyone in this really true public service. If you want free information, write to Amateur Radio, Newington, Connecticut, 06111. Amateur Radio, in the public interest.
Chambers Mayflower first helped Arizona families with their moving needs. Horse-drawn wagons were still a popular means of transport. As vehicles and moving techniques evolved, Chambers was there, improving with the times, and in some cases, initiating the progress. And so it has been for 67 years. Four generations of the Chambers family have dedicated themselves to providing the finest in knowledge, equipment, and personal concern to every move. Is it any wonder Chambers is Arizona's most recommended mover? For your next move, call Chambers Mayflower. Look under Moving in the yellow pages for Chambers Mayflower.
Washington Irving was born in New York, but for reasons of health, he traveled extensively abroad and actually had living quarters for a time in the Alhambra, that centuries-old palace that still stands on a hill in Granada, a relic of the time when the Moors ruled a large part of Spain. In fact, you can go there today and see the very rooms he occupied. And if you are very careful, and no one is looking, touched the keys of the spinach on which he played.
I stood in the teeming rain and gazed at the woman in black who sat on the steps of the scaffold. There was something awful in this solitary monument of woe. She looked to be a woman of some distinction. Who could it be but some poor mourner whom the dreadful axe had made desolate, who now sat here heartbroken on the strand of existence from which all that was dear to her had been launched into eternity? I could not leave the Place de Grève without speaking to her. Madame, your pardon, madame. I would not intrude upon your solitude, but neither can I pass by and leave you here alone. The storm, the hour of the night. Let me lead you away from this gruesome place. Let me take you to your friends who will cherish and take care of you. Madame?
I have no friends.
Oh, madame, such a one as you.
I have no friends on earth.
The guillotine has taken them all. Is that what you mean? My heart weeps for you. But if there are no friends to give you refuge, at least let me take you home.
I have no home. But in the grave.
Oh, madame, I know I am a stranger to you. You have no reason to trust either me or my intentions, but if you would permit me to offer you my protection. I am a poor student, madame. I am not even a native of Paris. I live in the most humble hotel in the Latin Quarter. Such as it is, I would be honored, happy, if you would let me place my single room at your disposal on this most wretched of nights.
You seem very kind. Very sincere.
Thank you, madame, for understanding. Then you will come with me? You will permit me to enlist as your protector.
Monsieur, my fate lies in your hand.
The storm had abated. All Paris was quiet. That great volcano of human passion slumbered for a while to gather fresh strength for the next day's eruption. I conducted my charge through the ancient streets of the Latin Quarter by the dusky walls of the Sorbonne to the dingy hotel where I lived. The hour was late and I had to ring for the concierge.
Coming! Coming!
No, don't be afraid of her. She's cross but really kind. Thank you. Thank you, madame. I'm so sorry to trouble you.
You have someone with you?
Yes, a friend.
Hey, come in, you and your friend.
Thank you, madame.
If you need anything, refreshment of any kind.
Yes, thank you. My room is on the first floor. You'll find it rather shabby, I'm afraid. This hotel once belonged to a member of the nobility, but only the remains of its old glory are still evident. You have to look very hard indeed to see them. Here we are. Here is the door, madame. I'll fetch a light. You can make yourself comfortable. There's a bed over there if you care to lie down. You must be tired. Ah, here we are. Here's our light.
You are very kind to a poor stranger.
Madame.
What is it? You are so pale.
Your hair, your eyes, your skin.
It pleases you?
Your black dress, your black cape, it's so simple.
Oh, I am happy you like them.
No jewels, no ornaments of any kind. Only a broad black band around your lovely neck with its diamond clasp. Oh, you are too perfect. You are too perfect by far, madame. May I tell you something of what is in my heart? I have loved you for a very long time.
What's that?
A very long time?
I have seen you every night for months. And many times during the day.
Oh, well, have you been following me, young man?
I have been dreaming of you. Asleep at night, in trance during the day. It has been your face, your form that filled my thoughts and fevered my imagination. Madame, I adore you.
Oh, how strange it all is.
Strange, but marvelous.
That you should have thought of me all this time.
Thought of you, dreamed of you.
Oh, was it that you, young and ardent, have filled your head with thoughts of the other sex? It would only be natural. And your thoughts simply reappeared in your dreams.
Madame, though I am of such a shy disposition, I have never had the courage to pursue my fancies into the world of reality. All this is known to a friend of mine. He was here today. A short visit to Paris. We talked here in this very room. I spent a good part of our time together telling him that while I thought of women as any man does, still, there was one in particular. One very particular one.
Oh, are you seeing?
My friend asked me what she looked like, this one particular woman. He asked me to describe her.
Yes? And?
And I said, her skin is white as a white rose.
Oh.
Her eyes are dark like sultry suns, and her hair a certain shade of deep red.
Oh, my dear.
Surely such a miracle that you have come to life, that you sit here in my little room in all your beauty and desirability. I told my friend this evening, I said, do not pity me because I love this woman of my dreams and shall always love her.
Oh, and what did he have to say to that, your friend?
I think he understood. At least, he accepted what I said as truth, as my truth. But then it was time for him to take his train. We said farewell. I started to walk back here. And then
we met by the guillotine.
And I dared to speak to you.
And I listened and believed
and
you.
And I brought you back to my humble room, and here we are. Together. I tell you, it is a miracle. The miracle of my life. It is yourself. It is you come to life. It is you sitting next to me. Your hand I am holding. Your eyes I gaze into. It is your lips I desire. If I might only...
Yes?
If I might kiss those lips just once...
Oh. Only one?
Madame, my most beloved.
Oh, my darling, again.
My sweet angel, you give me courage to ask you something I never thought to ask.
Yes, my love.
Do you feel as I feel?
Yes.
Why should we separate you and I? Our hearts are already united in the eye of reason and honor. We are as one.
Oh, yes.
You have no home, no family. Let me be home, family, everything to you. Rather, let us be everything to each other.
Oh.
Here, take my hand. I pledge myself to you forever.
Forever? You say...
Forever.
Oh, then, my lover, I am yours.
The next morning, in order not to disturb my beautiful sleeping bride, I crept cautiously and quietly from our bed, and as quietly dressed myself and went forth early in the day to look for larger quarters, since it was clear to me that my situation had so changed as to make the tiny student's room quite inappropriate. When I returned from my search, I stopped to speak to the concierge, who quite clearly was taking a certain enjoyment in my clandestine affair.
Good morning, monsieur.
Morning.
Will you be wanting a small repast, you and the lady? A coffee, perhaps? A croissant?
Yes, that would be very nice. Thank you. The lady has not asked for me.
No. No, monsieur. Nor has she gone out. I've watched for her. No, she still sleeps in your room, I believe.
Thank you.
I'll be up in a moment with your coffee and croissant.
Thank you so very much. We'll both appreciate that.
My darling. My love, it is I. I have been walking the streets looking for a better place for us to live. Two rooms, at least, by the river, if possible. Do you hear me? Well, come along, my sweetheart. Wake up now. The concierge is bringing us our breakfast. Well, come along. You cannot be comfortable lying like that, your head hanging over our poor little bed, your arm thrown over it. Well, let me move your arm, at least.
Oh, but how cold you are. How very cold. Well, your hand is like ice. Oh, my God. There's no pulse. No pulse at all. And your face, pale, ghastly. Oh, no.
Monsieur, I have brought breakfast for you and the lady.
The lady?
The lady is dead.
Dead. In my house. Police! I'm fetching the police! Police!
The gendarme arrived in short order. He found me kneeling by the side of the bed, gazing in horror and dreadful fascination at the lifeless face of the woman I had loved for so long. The woman who had finally given herself to me in a pledge of a lifetime of love. As the officer of the police entered the room, I looked up at him and saw him start back suddenly, a look of total amazement on his face.
Great merciful heaven. How does this woman come to be here?
Do you know her, monsieur?
Let me come closer.
Do you know who she is?
I know who she is. I was there in the Place de Grève when they chopped off her head. They guillotined her yesterday.
Know how to tell you what happened then. The policeman leaned over and unfastened the black collar with a diamond clasp that encircled the neck of my beloved. And horror of horrors, her beautiful head rolled upon the floor. And then I knew. My most awful fear had been true all along. The fiend had gained possession of me, and I was lost forever. Forever lost. There is a postscript to this story, appended by Washington Irving, and I shall read it to you. Is this really a fact? Said the inquisitive listener. A fact not to be doubted, was the reply. I had it from the best authority. The student told it to me himself. I saw him in a madhouse at Paris. I'll be back shortly.
I'm Susan Anton.
There's a powerful anti-itch drug I can buy without a doctor's prescription. Now I use Biclazine cream as directed.